spend some time now talking about compassion, this natural quality of our hearts. Begin with a poem from Hafiz. Just sit there right now. Don't do a thing. Just rest. For your separation from all is the hardest work in this world. What he's pointing to here is that this connection, this care and capacity to be with the world is our natural state. I was referring to this morning. That our natural connection and a natural responsiveness is already here and available to us. And a big part of our process is to eliminate what gets in the way of that, not to create it, not to create compassion or kindness. They're already here. How do we break down what keeps it from arising? And sometimes, you know, we're doing this practice and it feels really good. And maybe the question comes up for you sometimes when you're sitting or you're on retreat, like, so what does this have to do with what's happening in the world? There's a lot going on. And is this, you know, the classic navel watching? And I'm, you know, this is very self-indulgent or something. And so I want to tell you this little story. I was in Bhutan, a place that I have a relationship with, and I was there sitting up on a mountainside and in this little room. And it was not a very easy environment to be doing it in. It was, you know, the only retreat I've ever done where I stayed in an expedition weight down jacket and two pairs of pants the whole time. There was a window, but the glass was missing. So, but in spite of all the conditions there, I was there 2 weeks, and the only way to take a bath was in a bucket with water from the hillside. So you can imagine the temperature of that. But I did notice, it was quite remarkable, the amount of ease and contentment that I developed and had there. And after a while, I actually started to develop a little bit of, very subtle, but this just little nagging, like, is this okay for me to like be this content up here on the hillside in my down jacket sitting in this room? You know, shouldn't I be either here struggling, working out some big problem in my emotional thing, or having some big experience? And it's, I don't know. Or if I'm not going to be doing that, maybe I should be like out there taking care of things in the world. So I came down off the mountain after the amount of time I had committed to, and I had the opportunity to meet with a practice master there. He was the teacher for a whole monastery. And through a translator, I was able to talk with him. And I was doing a practice of awareness that he was very familiar with, and that probably was part of the contentment I had. And I asked him, well, you know, it was very nice, and I have this practice is good, but what's the point? And I loved it that I was asking that question, since I get asked it all the time. I was like, what's the point? And he looked at me, sort of a little, a slight air of disbelief in his, like, looking at me. And he said, "Well, compassion, of course. Compassion is the point." And I found that very meaningful. He was very much pointing to that our practice is the doorway to the care and the connection, that we do this to increase our capacity, that this is what the world needs most. Is our compassion. This is what the people we need, we meet and care about need most, is compassion. And sometimes we think what they need is our activity, our doing something. But it's the connection to the heart that brings meaning to what we do. So, one of the important pieces that we're developing when we practice, and that's connected, but is often it's the other side of the coin. And I like the image. It's talked about that our practice is a bird, and one side is wisdom, and the other side is compassion. And the body, you might say, is awareness or mindfulness there in the middle, holding it together. So compassion grows with the wisdom. And a big piece of the wisdom that allows the compassion to grow is this understanding that we're not a separate individual self. That we cannot wall ourselves off from the world, that we don't end at our skin. When we understand this, when we free ourselves of this isolation of being just here, then we start to feel how what's in and what's out are connected. This is how Dogen puts it. He says, when the self goes forward and fills the world, we've got a lot of selves filling the world these days. Have you noticed? Everybody's self out there getting what it needs and wants. Well, he says, when the self goes forward and fills the world, that is delusion. When the world comes in and fills the self, that is awakening. When the world comes in and fills the self, that is awakening. Can you see how this is very much the complete opposite of sometimes we get the idea if we're sitting that somehow we're going to go be the hermit in the cave and separate ourselves away from the world and create some sort of inner calm that's separate. But what's being pointed to here is that we're sitting in order to become completely permeable as a practice of letting the world in, of not isolating. We have a lot of concepts, a lot of beliefs about in and out, and a lot of beliefs about how if I take care of me, then I'll be okay. Well, all of you have been alive long enough to see some of the flaws in that. But as we acknowledge this, as we start to sense that we don't end here and there isn't this boundary, we often can end up in some unfamiliar territory, some places that challenge our identity. Philip Moffat has this great phrase that we're going around being the star of our own movie, and all of a sudden we've been told we don't have the main part. And that can be a little uncomfortable. Just ask the stars who, you know, get taken down a notch. But that's part of what we're doing in our practice when we sit, is we're breaking down this tendency to constantly be telling the story about me, to be dropping the thoughts about me, and instead having a direct experience. This is what the breath feels like. This is what the breeze, the sun, my feet. This is what it is to come into contact with the world directly, instead of having my story about the world. And as we do that, as we come into direct contact, what we're doing is coming into a contact with the truth. And there's many different ways that we approach that, through practicing just with the elements of direct experience, through seeing clearly the impermanence, how everything affects us and is constantly changing and we don't have control over it. There's many different practices and ways that we're breaking down this sense of self and separation. And all of the ways we break it down are leading us towards this understanding, this potential for compassion. Here's a poem from Rabindranath Tagore. The same stream of life that runs through my veins night and day runs through the world and dances in rhythmic measures. It is the same life that shoots in joy through the dust of the earth in numberless blades of grass and breaks into tumultuous waves of leaves and flowers. It is the same life that is rocked in the ocean cradle of birth and death, in ebb and in flow. I feel my limbs are made glorious by the touch of this world of life, and of my pride, and my pride is from the life throb of ages dancing in my blood this moment. So as we start to drop this isolation, this separation and belief in me, some amazing things start to happen. And all of us have experienced this. And it's a matter of slowly shifting the place we live, where we spend more of our time, our station, so to speak. And when I had an experience many years ago, I was some friends of mine were in Nepal. They were adopting a child, and they had been there 9 months. The country had descended into one of its political destabilizations, so the paperwork wasn't coming through. And somewhere after they had their child for 9 months but didn't have the paperwork to leave, the child was taken away from them. And I remember I talked to them, which you can imagine that was challenging, trying to even get to connection into Nepal.
And I talked to them and I heard this, and I can remember very clearly where I was. And I remember waking up in the middle of the night with this strong feeling of when the right hand is hurt, you know, you cut it or you fall down on the ground and you scrape it. Does the left hand then just go about its business? You know, it's got pancakes to flip or, you know, got something else it's busy doing, and just sort of like, oh, well, you know, sorry you fell and scraped your hand. I've got pancakes to flip, or, oh, you're bleeding, too bad. You know, it's not actually the way it is. The left hand automatically helps the right hand. There's no illusion that something else is more important. And for me, that was a very profound understanding that came through. And fortunately, I had enough miles accumulated and in in like less than 24 hours I was on a plane to Nepal. Didn't have any idea if I could do anything useful. That wasn't the point. It was just that the left hand needed to help the right hand. And it was something I could do. You know, it wasn't outside of what was possible. There's a lot of times the left hand wants to help the right hand, and it's outside of what's possible. You know, we have to acknowledge that. But sometimes it's possible. And one of the other amazing things that happened in that was I was traveling to, you know, those long flights to the other side of the world. And I have gone to that side of the world before, and I've been there since. And I really want my window seat, and I want, you know, things to be a certain way, you know, wherever I can arrange it. And, you know, do I have the right stuff with me when I get there? You know, where am I staying, and how is that going to... None of it mattered. None of it mattered. What a relief. It was, I could sit in a middle seat and be completely okay. Because it wasn't about me. This was not about me. It was not about me having a good time or me being okay. It was the left hand taking care of the right hand. And that whole trip, it was so easy. It was so easy. It really showed me the relief of not being centered around me. And think about in your own life. Think about those times when perhaps caring for a sick person or child or helping someone in some way, where the idea that this was going to be pleasant and easy and, you know, how you like to spend your time, your vacation time, wasn't part of the deal. It was just you responding to what was needed. And can you connect and feel that sense of like it was completely okay? And it might have just been for a flash, or you might have been lucky and the need was so great that it went on for a long time. Sometimes people have this when they care for someone who is dying over a period of time. a parent or a friend, and all of a sudden everything else falls away. And it's like, this is what I'm doing. And from the outside, you might look at it and go, wow, you're making a lot of sacrifices, or, oh, isn't this hard? But sometimes it's not like that. It's like, oh, this is okay. This is what I'm doing. Shantideva said, when acting on behalf of others, no amazement arises in me, just as when feeding myself, I expect nothing in return. This is from Andy Olensky. In a profoundly interdependent world, generosity is fundamental to the future economy of life. Even the simplest biological function involves receiving something from others, nutrient, oxygen, life, processing in it in some unique way, and then passing it on to all other members of the matrix of life. We all do this, whether or not we are aware of it. The practice of giving becomes perfected when we align ourselves very deeply with this truth by consciously and mindfully offering everything we do or say, even everything we think, as an act of universal generosity. I really like this acknowledgement that it's going on all the time, but when we step into it, now we're in alignment with the truth. So much easier. Where does my breath stop and yours start? Where does our actions, our hearts, our care, are there really edges to it? This natural response, because we are not cut off, we are not separate. Yane, who you might, you might know, he's a teacher, and talks about the hand rubbing the foot. The foot and hand, what starts where? Hand, foot, with a lot of complication in between. And so we often have to pay attention to all that complication in order to sort it out, so that we don't get confused between the two. And one of the very important aspects of this caring, of this connecting the hand, the foot, the cut or scraped other hand, one of it is to really realize it wants to relieve the suffering. It wants to relieve that. And in fact, that desire to relieve suffering is the basic aspect of our practice. That's what brings us to practice, is compassion, wanting to relieve the suffering in our own experience. I think it's wonderful to realize that we're already practicing compassion by showing up. Here, showing up when we sit. That is a response to it. You know, when we acknowledge that there's suffering, when we acknowledge that first noble truth of suffering, that's moving in this direction. So allowing us ourselves to feel the suffering is the first step in our practice and in the practice of compassion. Same, same. We have to be willing to feel it. And pity is very different than compassion, because in pity, we have a sense that we're still separate.
that the suffering is over there and I'm over here. When we are willing to really fully feel the suffering, then there's not separation. It's not you having this experience and me watching you have it. So we study this first noble truth. We study the suffering in order to come into full contact with it, to be willing to know it. Dogen says, to study the self is to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to let go of the self. But the first part is to study, to let ourselves feel what's here. And that can be sometimes uncomfortable, to acknowledge, to touch into the pain, physical, mental, emotional. And that's why sometimes our practice isn't what we initially imagined it to be. Sometimes how many people came to practice thinking, oh, it's going to be so great. I'm going to learn to meditate, and then I'm going to sit there, and my thoughts will all go away, and I'll be all calm, and it'll be really sweet and blissful, and then I'll have this half-hour period. I go into bliss every day, and then I'll get up and have my day. How many people started there? Only a few of you. Okay, the others must have gotten more information than I did when I started. You know, it's not like that. It's like to come into contact with the suffering is the practice. And we have to acknowledge that, you know, there's a lot of instinctive, natural reason to not feel it. And it's good to acknowledge that. We do not like the unpleasant, if something is unpleasant. You know, and this isn't just us. You put a amoeba on a slide and you put something unpleasant to it, a little toxic thing, it will pull away from it. You know, this is not a highly evolved human instinct. So sometimes, you know, the good thing about our understanding and our humanity is we can start to see, okay, I can move towards this. It's not easy, but I'm willing to move towards it because it's the truth, and the truth is what frees us. And giving up some of the guarding. There are so many ways we guard ourselves and protect. And, I mean, you've already seen, it doesn't always look so perfect when we drop our guards. We're used to having a certain way we go through the world. And as I've sort of dropped away the guarding, I notice like my heart, sort of wear my heart on my sleeve and sort of things impact, and being somebody who has a high water table, it kind of leaks. Oh, well, that's part of the cost, you know? It's just these sensitive beings that we are. This is from Joanna Macy. Feeling the pain of the world is not a weakness. This is our God-given, or put another way, an aspect of our Buddha nature. This openness of heart that characterizes the caring individual is a function of maturity. Don't ever apologize for the tears you shed on behalf of other beings. This is, in its essence, not craziness, but compassion. This capacity to speak out on behalf of others, because you have the right to, because you can suffer with them, is part of our spiritual nature. Don't ever apologize for the tears you shed on behalf of other beings. I think this is part of what tends to keep us away from it, to try to put some buffer between us and what's there. We tend to go into trying to fix it or change it, mostly so that we don't have to feel it. Have you ever noticed that, like, somebody else is having some sort of challenge in their lives and your instinct is like, okay, how can I fix the situation? And check and see if part of the reason you want to fix it is because you're so uncomfortable with the fact they're uncomfortable. It can also come out of care and compassion that you want to help out, but see if you can notice the distinction. Opening to these internal experiences and picking them up and touching them. This is from Pesta Gertler, The Healing Time. Finally, on my way to yes, I bump into all the places where I said no to my life, all the untended wounds, and I lift them one by one close to my heart, and I say, holy, holy. And I read that because acknowledging that when there is suffering, when there's something in our own heart and someone else's heart, it doesn't mean something has gone wrong. This is our natural sensitivity as human beings. This is a gift. Thank goodness our hearts are impacted. Imagine this world if we weren't. In fact, that's the challenge in our world, is the places where we've succeeded in walling ourselves off and not being impacted. The more we open up to this impactfulness that is here, the less harm we're likely to cause, and the more we're going to respond to each other. And of course, we have to maintain some balance with it. We have to be sensitive about it and respectful of ourselves and realizing that sometimes it's too much, and to be gentle in that and to come to a place of self-compassion when we bump up against some things that are hard. Self-compassion is where this starts. And realize that, yeah, some of these quotes I'm reading, yeah, there's the ideal, but we're all limited. We do as much, we feel as much as we can, we respond as much as we can, but not to overlay with some big story about should, and I ought to be sensitive to everything and trying to solve everything. That's just another, it's like a spiritual superego coming in and trying to run the show. Offering what we can. And to realize that as part of this understanding that we're interconnected is that we don't have to help and solve everything by ourselves. That to be just one person, one movement, if you've ever worked in, you know, some sort of, like, helped in a soup kitchen or helped after, you know, with something that needed to happen to take care of somebody, and there's a group of people working, you realize actually to do it with other people is even better, because then there's less like, oh, I have to do it. There's more just being part of what's happening, part of the taking care of. And to realize that suffering is here to stay. We're not going to fix it. And so it's really more of an action of like, what can I do within the fabric of what's here? To go back to my example, which, by the way, it all did work out. She's the example of going to Nepal. It did work out. They have a lovely daughter who's 12 years old now. But in that case, like, I couldn't do anything about the Maoist government that was taking over Nepal. I couldn't even do anything to help them get the paperwork. I couldn't even help them during the time I was there. I couldn't even help them get their daughter back during that time. There was nothing I could actually do to solve the situation. And of course, that's painful, right? We want to be able to solve it. And yet the fact that I was there still mattered. So we have to acknowledge the limitations and we work with what's there. And we have to move from what moves us. Where do we actually have that urge? Where does it, instead of the idea, I should do this, where does it come from our open heart? Where are we touched? And it's amazing, you know, I think we're all touched by the stories of compassion that where it just naturally arises. And, you know, these that we seem to be having for reasons of climate change, more and more natural disasters. And it's interesting watching how people, the response to that in so many cases is this natural urge to relieve the suffering. This wasn't a natural disaster, but I remember hearing from people I knew who were in New York after 9/11 that, you know, it was amazing what people, the way people behave towards each other, the generosity and the caring. And some said, well, yeah, it was like 3 or 4 months till New York went back to being New York. People started behaving the way that it was expected. But I say it because this urge to do it. The Rohingya, many of you might be aware of the Rohingya being so, what's happening there is continuing to happen, is so horrible in Burma and Myanmar, where they've been persecuted and they're running over to Bangladesh. Well, so they're running from one of the poorest countries in the world to the poorest country in the world. And Bangladesh has like no resources of, you would think. And then there's these amazing stories of the Bangladeshi, very touched, the Bangladeshi finding a vehicle and driving around in a village where people have almost nothing, and people giving whatever they can into a vehicle and it being driven to the refugee camps. People who have nothing giving something. It's quite amazing what these hearts will bring us to. It takes a lot of courage often to act from our heart, to be willing to step out of the me that was guarding in ourselves. You know, you may be less familiar with it, but sort of more mundane in a certain way, but still a lot of courage. And now it's a couple years ago when the Black Lives Matter movement was just going up, and there were football players who
chose to take a knee at the beginning of the football when the national anthem was being played in support of the Black Lives Matter movement. And so when it was playing, they would take down a knee. And the people in the stadium would boo them. These are people whose whole career in life and everything is dependent on these fans. And they're very susceptible, very political to do that. And some people did lose their position. But to take the situation that they had available to them and to use it in a way that expressed themselves. It's interesting that compassion can be very assertive without being violent. Can be very assertive. You know, even the a parent, you know, as a child is about to touch a hot stove saying no, that's actually a very compassionate action and assertive. And think of, as parents, how much compassionate, assertive action is needed. So compassion isn't necessarily soft. In fact, there can be a kind of sacred rage that comes out of our compassion, a fierceness, fierce compassion. And sometimes that's what's called for. There's not a right or a wrong way, but this urge to act is embedded in the compassion. And the wisdom to realize that we can't fix it all, we can't solve it, and we can't respond to everything with which our heart is touched. One of the individual expressions of compassion that comes in every day is the Buddha's sila, the precepts of non-harming, non-stealing, kind with our words, care with our sexual energy, and not taking drugs and intoxicants that lead to heedlessness. This is an act of understanding how we're connected and an act of compassion that we can engage in and do every day. And it's a natural movement of our heart. And tomorrow I'll say more about this balance of being touched by everything without getting overwhelmed. Because I think this is something that a lot of people, I want to say one thing about it though right now, a lot of people feel like, oh, if I let in the suffering of what's happening, I'm going to get completely overwhelmed and I'm going to get, you know, I'll be incapacitated with that. And part of what's happening there is we're letting it in and then turning back and focusing on me. Getting confused that we're supposed to solve it and that this is affecting me. It's not coming in and being felt and let moved through us and responding where we can. And we're all limited in our capacity. And so balancing those two things. This is from, again, from Joanna Macy. We are only stuck in despair if we fail to realize we are dynamic, ever-changing, flowing, open systems. And we're only stuck with what we refuse to experience, because that means we have to hold it at arm's length, and that's exhausting. But if you let all feelings flow through you, channels within you open to beauty, love, wonder, excitement, courage, and to a sense of connectedness with all of life. That's the invitation. And it's an invitation we need right now. All the world needs our compassionate hearts. Those close to us, those further away, to allow ourselves to be touched and to respond. This is one of the gifts of our practice and our basic humanity. I'm going to end with a famous section from Shantideva, from the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. May I be protector for those without one, a guide for all travelers on the way. May I be a bridge, a boat, and a ship for all who wish to cross the water. May I be an island for those who seek one, and a lamp for those desiring light. May I be a bed for all who wish to rest, and a slave for all who want a slave. May I be a wishing jewel, a magic vase, powerful mantras, and great medicine. May I become a wish-fulfilling tree and a cow of plenty for the world. Just like space and the great elements such as earth, may I always support the life of all the boundless creatures. And until they pass away from pain, may I also be the source of life for all the realms of varied beings that reach unto the ends of space. That's a pretty big prayer. But it's pretty inspiring to just hold that intention, that capacity, that we just move in that direction at our own pace, in our own way, doing the little small things wherever we can and connecting with our own compassionate hearts again and again. So let's just sit for a moment.